Mr. Greg Proops.
In the city of Wellington on the North Island, and what can only be described as the New Zealand International Comedy Festival, continues apace. And here, in this hot-ass humid bar of a terrarium of a place, where turtles are fed worms from the ceiling and palm trees grow in the daytime, where I found a truffle pig in the back room, hunting for mushrooms in this moisture-laden atmosphere. What they call the fringe bar, or if you're from here, the fringe bar. In New Zealand, the smartest man in the world, Proopcast, commences. Hail, one and all. Welcome, Kiwis and friends of Kiwis. I'm Greg Proops, Key fucking Aura. And what a place it is, where the winds blow ceaselessly in from the sea here. Yesterday, almost gale force. Today, a sprightly semi-gale force. After the tornadoes that unfortunately hit Auckland yesterday, I was having lunch with my wife at one of your fabulous dockside pubs here. I won't say the name of it. The first part is Saint, the last part is John's. And home of a staggering bowl of green-lipped mussels, something I'd only seen in the most exotic confines of the section that holds seafood in the most remote places in Los Angeles. A confection from the sea only doled out at low tide if people have been extra good that day and have lived up to all their parents' expectations. Yet here they're given out at lunchtime for the paltry sum of $10 in a commodious bowl ladled with a sauce that can only be described as the embryonic fluid of everything that was ever born from the sea. An exquisite melange of salt and butter covering each green-lipped mussel as they gently open up and succumb to you, each one feeling its way around your mouth as it submits to your desires. Semi-open and semi-hard, they are received. And gigantic and hard to swallow, they are consumed. It is both a sex act and an act of comestible eating all at once. And with wedge-sized chips the size of small planks used for building. Dipped in both aioli and gravy as if France and Canada had conspired to make New Zealand the fulcrum of all that makes one's ventricles clog in the night with platelets hitherto unseen. The green-lipped mussel shall go down in my memory here in New Zealand along with all the other mollusks I have murdered. I am, in fact, the Jeffrey Dahmer of mollusks in this land, because all have fallen before me. What are they called? Oh, I'm going to forget the name. The oysters, they're...
Powa.
Oh, powa, don't even. Powa, powa, wow. So fucking powa-full are these powa that I consumed. Not just an abalone, because an abalone sits by itself on a rock all day, adhered with, but the giant muscle that nature gave to the power leaps onto your plate and screams, "Eat me." They were gently battered today when I received the power, having not had one before, and I had to ask twice because I'm dim and the accent doesn't get through all the way until a few hours out in the acclimating climes of conjoining with other people in social intercourse. Having only just come from our room, I had to ask twice for the power, and then when I found out what it was, delight isn't the word that I could describe. I felt as if I was swooshed up from the bottom of the ocean, Nemo guiding me the whole way to that safe place past where SpongeBob lives. The power torn from the rock and then meeting its natural fate in breadcrumbs. In nature, the power and the breadcrumb, mortal enemies. Here in Wellington, unbelievable mates. Yeah, the power blew my mind. I felt the amazing power of the power, and I shall only eat them whenever I am here, to the exclusion of all things else, which is going to be quite a fucking trick at Brecky. I've never seen a power anywhere else on God's gray earth that I've traveled. I assume there might be a cache of them somewhere hidden in Malaysia or Indonesia where people smuggle them back here using a fruit hat as a decoy as they go through customs. Thank you. Two people found that funny. I guess the rest of you think an obsession with keeping fruit out of your country is somehow fucking normal. a giant sign with an apple on it that says $400 fine. I had a bag of heroin and a semi-automatic in my pants. I was carrying a stainless steel Beretta up my bum, and I waltzed through, but they went, fuck, is that an apple, mate? Crime kingpin, crime lord, wow. Call out the Joker and the Riddler and all the other supervillains. He fucking brought an apple into our borders. What does he think he's going to do to the non-indigenous animals that we've imported over the past 150 years that have laid rape to this land? The possum that cries in the night that we brought in originally for hides because we have no soul when it comes to killing possums. Three animals wandered this land once upon the day, right? It was the lizard, the bat, and some other fucking thing. Then came the Maoris with the pigs and the rats. Then came the Europeans with their pestilence and their bubonic plague and their awesome alcoholism. That remains the chief trait of this island to this day. Fruit through the border. For those of you visiting New Zealand who live elsewhere on the world, know this. One, it's extraordinarily far from wherever you live. Time changes and goes backwards, and then you end up... When I'm leaving, I end up in Los Angeles 2 hours after I left. Explain the fuck out of that, Einstein. And secondly, know that they x-ray your bags after you've got here and already collected them from baggage. Americans are used to being treated, as I pointed out in Australia, like a black guy at Target. And having been shook down every which way, we're not used to your gentle type of customs here where you just waltz through and there's no scanners and no one takes a photograph of your testicles. But the extra x-ray of your baggage after you enter the country is going to come to quite a shock as many Americans, especially those who have secreted fruit upon their person, hoping to bring it in to those pining for it here. I must comment, first of all, on something that might seem painfully obvious to you. Assume it, just throw that anywhere. Air New Zealand's safety announcement is given by Richard Simmons. Yes, that Richard Simmons. The one famous for sweating to the oldies and sweating to so many other things. Still wearing his stripy shorty shorts. Looking slightly more superannuated, but still keeping the perm going as the night wears on. It is the gayest safety demonstration film that has ever been shown in the history of gay. It's gayer than Liza's ex-husband's lined up in a police file. Gayer than Liz Taylor's wedding. Gayer than being read Oscar Wilde by Almodovar. Gayer than a choreographer's luncheon. It is gay and unbelievably rewarding. I've never had so much fun on an aircraft. And you can tell the staff, even though they've watched it over a billion times, is still wildly amused at the reaction they're getting from half the people. The New Zealanders who haven't yet seen it and the Americans whose mouths are hanging open all the way to the floor. We really aren't that bold and venturesome in America. Usually it's some horrible corporate video of a pretend person wearing a pretend outfit. Although, as you may know, if you fly in Australia, Qantas, which has no U and should be rightfully pronounced Qantas. uses John Travolta as their safety announcement in a fake air captain's uniform. And he goes, I'm the captain of the ship. Well, not this time. And you're like, really? A fictional character from the movies is the captain of our plane? And I'm supposed to buy this? That's awesome. I'm from California. We had a fictional character from the movies as our governor. The Travolta one's not quite as gay, but let's just say there's a great deal more closet space in that presentation. Back to the weather here. Amazing. Like Jack London, like Joseph Conrad. A brigantine weather where one is lashed to the mast. I asked to be shackled to the yardarm so that I wouldn't be blown asunder. We sat inside Stajohn's eating our green-lipped mussels and lipping over them lasciviously, watching the lawn chairs outside skitter and flail like so many ants being blown across by a vindictive child. Ants are insects native to other fucking countries besides yours. The waitress came up and I said, "Wow, tis a fail full force gale today, tis it not, my fair wench?" And she said, "Well, hopefully nobody will die." It's that never say die can do plucky spirit that makes Kiwi Land, the two islands and adjoining archipelago, stand the most stoutest of all the new land masses on this earth. A place of insane daring do, where people will brave any kind of danger, adventurous, heedless, adrenaline junkie, fucking possum thrill seekers who will throw themselves off buildings and jump out of planes onto perfectly good mountains, who will dive into the deepest part of the sea, who will reenact Hobbit movies for years at a time. And yet you do it with the sang-froid of, if I may quote F. Scott Fitzgerald, with all the sang-froid of a safecracker plying his trade. With no sweating and no nervousness, you forge right ahead. Sometimes I wouldn't know you're there, except I see you. That's how quiet you are. Once you were described to me by another New Zealander as the Canadians of the South Pacific, I would say yes, but they play full contact hockey and you play rugby and do a dance in front of it. You're not afraid to have men in shorts do a haka dance, and that speaks to both your virility and your latent homosexuality. In any country that shows a Richard Simmons safety video and does a haka dance while wearing shorts can't be all bad. The men wear knee socks while they do the haka, thank fuck, because people walk around barefoot here like you're in the fucking tropics or something. Pumping gas barefoot, white people barefoot. Wow. Wow, white guys, think about it. No one wants to see your feet. I don't care how fucking warm it is out. And by the way, it ain't that fucking warm out. Bluff oysters. That's what I was trying to think of before. The bluff oysters are creamy parcels like a ravioli made by a top maestro who's been sequestered for ages and ages in a Tuscan kitchen and only let out now to imbue the secret of his magic to all of us who stand dazzled in our mortality. The bluff oyster stands alone in oysterhood as a mixture of brininess, and when hit with some of the delicious test tube, yes, I said test tube that it came with, here in New Zealand, it's always the 80s. That's how I got here. Go to Tonga and turn left at 1989. The vinegar that came from the test tube hit the brininess of the bluff oyster, and puff and powa, the magic dragon, I had my shit exploded and imploded in 1,000 dazzling emeralds danced before my eyes. The bluff oysters were all that and a whole lot fucking more. I did the, is it Puka or Puka? How do you say it?
Pukana.
Pukana. Awesome. I'm learning to do it here. I think I've got the tongue for it. The eyes I'm working on. Your eyes have to goggle properly. And may I say, if it wasn't for the Maori karaoke show, you would have no fucking good TV at all in this country. I don't mean to bag on Shortland Street, but wow. Not sweet ass, bro. I don't know if there's an opposite. Bitter ass, bro. Bitter ass. Let's discuss a few culinary conquests down here, aside from the mollusks, which are indomitable and shall reign supreme. The wine here is absolutely addictive. I'm almost certain the wine has chunks of morphine in it, because I can't stop drinking it, and the minute I get up, I want more. However, you haven't conquered one thing, and it reminds me of the old country. When I say the old country, what I mean here is, of course, England, and mostly Scottish land, because the weather reminds me of Scottish land here. And though you're not as dour as Scots, nor as removed as English people emotionally, you still feel some of your emotions occasionally. There is an undeniable Anglo quality that kicks this place around. For instance, pies are eaten here, even though food has been discovered in the last 50 years. And you no longer require pies because the Nazi blitz has stopped, you see. Nor more do you have to eat tomato and beans on toast either. We actually have food now. But the point is this. I've ordered iced tea here. Now, call me what you will. Call me unreliable. Call me irresponsible. Call me quirky. Call me a fucking seppo with no fucking mind of my own who runs mindlessly with all the other gun-toting, fucking mindlessly violent people of my nation. But iced tea is the fucking prince of drinks, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you. One person in the room. Everyone else, that's what beer is for. You're talking about being gay, and yet you're drinking iced tea when beer is available in the daytime? Iced tea is the very diplomat of drinks. And I suggest you learn how it goes, and this is why. Because 3 weeks in Australia and over a week here, and I've asked for iced tea in almost every place I've gone, just as a personal sociological experiment, as well as a culinary adventure into the Antipodes. I says, may I have iced tea? And half the time people go, we don't have it. Now, let me explain the ingredients of iced tea to you. So that should you work in a restaurant, you might gather those ingredients up, right? It reminds me of a donut shop in Mississippi that I used to frequent where their slogan was outside, your one-stop donut shop. You guys can think about that for a second. Is there really a donut shop on earth that you stop at and then go, fuck, I gotta go to another one to get some more of the elements of a donut? Pretty much you don't have to do the rounds when you're gonna buy a donut. It's all there in one fell swoop. The frosting, the cake, the whole enchilada, as we say in America. Or as you would say here, the whole pie. Iced tea, for your information, contains two elements, tea and ice. Okay, now would you like to look me in the goddamn eye while working in a restaurant, while wearing an apron, holding a pad in your hand, and tell me you don't have it? What you could do is go over to where the kettle is and boil up some fucking water, and then pour that water on some tea that you have. Then later, when it's steeped for a minute or two, pour that over ice and kaboom, kalakazam. Just like fucking Gandalf. Some elvish runes, kalame, kalaka, kalamala, kalamala. Pretend you're Cate Blanchett for a moment. There it is, iced tea. It's just that goddamn simple. It would be like if you looked me in the eye and we don't have Coke with ice. No way can we get that together. Yeah, you fucking can by putting ice in Coke, and that's how iced tea works. It's a magical combination. This, I completely put down to England, and I blame them utterly for your failure in this area. Because English people will look you straight in the eye and go, we don't have it. And I'll say, why don't you boil some tea and put it on some ice? And they'll go, we can't do that! I'm like, can't you hear? Those are Messerschmitts. Yeah, you want the Jerrys to win? Then fucking make us make iced tea, American. You come over here with your nylons and your eggs and whatnot. Here's another thing that I blame on the English that happens here. And I notice you're not laughing as much, but when I get to how fat and repulsive Americans are, I'm sure I'll have you back. I've asked for ice here, right? And you get a couple of cubes of ice. You can see by the glass I've got here that had the two paltry cubes in it that are doled out with a spoon that are kept in a bucket during the witchcraft era of New Zealand. That ice is a precious commodity here, even though you are unfucking believably close to Antarctica and therefore have no excuse whatsoever why you're not just pulling fucking bergs over by the dozen and making all the snow cones in the world here. I asked for a bucket of ice at the hotel, and the guy at room service said, do you want drinking ice or cooling ice? Let me get this straight. One type of ice you'll give me that I can put in a drink. The other type of ice, if I put in a drink, I'm likely to die? What are you keeping it in? Some sort of rancid bin from 1584 or something? Something from Cook's First Mission here? Some sort of bucket with hardtack in it and weevils crawling in and out? What do you mean cooling ice? Ice should be served in one kind of a bucket, the kind that you can put into a goddamn drink as soon as you want. There is no such thing as cooling ice. Unless you're a dog of some kind and you've just recently lain in ice of some way. And the crowd goes quiet. Everyone here like, really, Greg? Yeah, fucking really. If you bring ice to me in a bucket, I'm gonna put it in my drink. Even if I'm using it for a wild hangover or some other 50s party prank where I've got a cooling thing on my head. I realize that this small diatribe is getting me nowhere. No, no. You are the country of whale riders. You are the country of Everest climbers. You are the country of bungee jumpers and Anzac Day and fearless fucking Kiwis who stare into the teeth of the storm and barely utter two words until it's give me a fucking beer. The Rugby World Cup is here in September and the oyster harvest is being postponed in halves so that the people who are here for the World Cup can enjoy the oysters. I applaud you for that. Thank you, darling. Again, it's just me and the one woman in the corner who finds me wildly amusing. The rest of you are like, fuck you, we wanted oysters during the World Cup too. Apparently you weren't rich corporate visitors from other lands. So fuck you and all your nativeness for staying here during the Rugby World Cup. Well, well done. I'm not certain what other countries play rugby. Sadly, it's not on the radar for me as one of my favorite sports. I know men in shorts play it and kick the living shit out of each other. So I know it's no sport for sissies, because you would not play a sport for sissies because you are New Zealand. And I have no idea where the Zealand of the past is located. Yes, I assumed it was in Scotch. Someone just went, Scotch. Been around the island a little bit. Auckland, before the unfortunate tornado, was supposed to play Christchurch, but God intervened, and God bless those people there. Went to Hamilton. Wow, what happened? What happened, New Zealand? If I wanted that shit, I could have gone to Bakersfield. About 2 hours outside of Los Angeles, except the country music's better. I spent 4 days in Hamilton one night, and had a couple of people gleefully close their restaurants on me. Can we get some lunch? It's 2:59, not 3. We're closed now. Thank you. Then I found the statue of Richard O'Brien dressed as Riff Raff. And not just as Riff Raff, but in the last segment of the movie where he comes back as a transsexual Transylvanian to threaten Frankenfurter, and it's the Frankenfurter, it's all over. That part, the awesome part. We return to Transylvania, prepare the transit beam. That part. And I thought, if you're going to pick the riff-raff part, they picked the gayest part of the movie, quite frankly. His sack is hanging down, he's wearing tights and platform shoes, he's got a top knot on. And I thought, right on, Hamilton. How did he grow up there in the late 50s and early 60s, is all I have to ask you people. Because two drunk guys were singing to me the whole time I stood next to the statue. I don't know how emotional it is for you people, but coming from San Francisco like I do, Rocky Horror was like our national anthem slash movie. I grew up in my teenage years every weekend at Rocky Horror, high as the fucking Dickens, laughing my ass off. And to see a statue of him dressed in that with his transit beam ray gun and whatnot gave my heart unbelievable boundings of joy that leapt like a hamster in its wheel in the night on a 5-day pee binge or whatever you people call it. So you've heard of Hamilton, because when I tell people I went there, they're like, you went to Hamilton? Who booked your fucking tour? This is what makes me love New Zealand, aside from so many other things. The blue penguins that are so elusive and I cannot see them. The kiwi bird, very rare, very elusive. I didn't know this about the kiwi. The kiwi is this bird that was hunted almost to extinction for the fruit and shoe polish it provides. Thank you for laughing. The cover of the Dominion Post today. Yes, I read the Dominion Post today and every day I've been here. Said, no, someone went, sorry. No, you're all right. I can't read my own notes here. People remember a pie shop that closed. This was the front page. By the way, to orient everyone who's listening to this Proofcast right now, this is the week, 2 weeks subsequent to Easter. This is the week of the royal wedding, the birther, and Osama bin Laden. It might be the most hectic news week since fucking 9/11. and the Dominion Post ran a piece about a pie shop that closed with personal reminiscences. This piece was almost 2 pages long. I can't tell you how many column inches this piece was. Apparently, across from Westpac Stadium, there was a really cute little pie shop, right? And to explain to our American listeners, pies aren't the pies that you think they are. A pie is not a delicious thing filled with fruit that you put whipped cream or ice cream on and it's served a la mode. No, a pie means there's beef or pig's knuckles or a snout or something in it, or some ass end of some fucking quadruped has been crammed into a hot pie with a flaky crust on it, and when you're drunk, holy shit, are they fucking good. The first bite is like biting into the mantle of the earth. A complete and horrible magmic surprise of unbelievable geological proportions. Your tongue recoils in horror as the heat from the pie destroys every taste bud. The roof of your mouth becomes an incandescent cauldron trying to provide its own aerial fucking sprinkler safety system, but to no avail, because the first bite has already hit your mouth and you're fucked 8 ways from Wednesday. The second bite is subsequent to a giant slug of beer, or maybe an L&P, or whatever you're quaffing down at this ungodly hour, standing drunk outside of the fucking pie shop. And that one you can finally taste some of the pig knuckle, or beef ass, or whatever is located inside the pie, with tatties, or nappies, or nippies, or whatever the fuck you quaint Antipodean people call your hobbit-like vegetables that you grow down there. So this pie shop across the street, if I could read my own goddamn writing, I'll die. He said off mic. McDonald? I can't read the cocking thing. Anyway, they've closed it. And many reasons were given in this lengthy 17,000 word article. One of which was they'd opened a McDonald's across the way, which said, cut into the pie shop's business. Bullshit. If I know you people, you'd eat a double Big Mac with fries and then go get a fucking pie. And I've had your electric poo-ha, and I can tell you that the impetus is there. And secondly, it also said that it used to be the new shop that's opening, the new cart that's opening where the pie cart was, it's going to close at 7:30, so no more late-night drunken eatings. And I could tell that's where the entire city of Wellington shed a solitary clown tear. When they saw the 7:30 closing on the fish and chips cart, they were like, oh, mama. That was the cover of the Dominion Post. When I was coming in a few days ago, I was reading about Malaysian speed smugglers. You call it pee here. I haven't quite sorted that out yet. At home, of course, meth. In Hawaii, ice. Because Hawaii is the state that invites you to stop, collaborate, and listen. Each Malaysian speed smuggler had a kilo of speed in their tennis shoes, and the New Zealand customs authorities said they were able to apprehend them because they were walking funny. To be sure, if I had 2.2 pounds of methamphetamine in my tennis shoe, I might hobble a bit and not eat anything on that long-ass flight from Malaysia. Would you like some tea? No, fuck no, I'm good. Can we smoke on this flight? Kittens. Speaking of kittens, my most overused phrase, here's an article about kittens. Well, actually, it's about the floods in Waimarama, in Hawke's Bay. I know I'm mispronouncing it horribly. You'll have to forgive me. But this is a kitten-oriented article. For someone who uses the expletive holy kittens more than any other expletive, and that unfortunate flood that hit earlier this week in Hawke's Bay, we bobbed out of here, but this is from an article from the, of course, the Dominion Post. What other paper do I read?
Sorry.
It's okay. Bluff oysters. Did I mention the bluff oysters? Each one is like a perfect rugby ball. Kicked through the goalpost directly into your mouth. Score! Never mind the Rugby World Cup. The fucking Bluff Oyster World Cup was happening. We bobbed out of here before the current really got through. As we made our way through the water, we heard the shrieking and saw our kitten floating past us. Georgia managed to get her hand out and put her on a shelf outside the house. The kitten was the least of my worries at the time. 2 days later, when we went back to the house, the kitten came bounding across the mud to meet us. Happy kitten ending. Nothing cuter than a kitten story that ends with a kitten bounding across the mud after it's been put on a shelf for safekeeping during a flood. And that's what New Zealand's all about. They heard a shrieking and the kitten came floating by and she grabbed it and put it on a shelf. Other countries don't build shelves on the outside of their houses as kitten repositories. Now for the headline news. Mariah Carey just had twins. Jesus fucking help us. How old is Mariah Carey? Seriously, what kind of fucking cougar is she to give birth to the fucking... No, she's not that... Oh, is she in her 30s or is she 40? Anybody know? 40 and whatnot? Holy Christ. And she had two twins, one of whom she named, and I'm not fucking kidding, Moroccan Scott. Why would you name your child after a drug dealer for the Stones from the 70s? Is Moroccan Scott here yet? I'm fucking jonesing like a dog. Moroccan Scott pulls up with an anvil case and shit. Sorted. Got any iced tea? No, we don't have that, mate. I got green lip muscles, he said on the third try and making it not funny. Justin Bieber was egged in Sydney 3 nights ago. I know. I think those eggs spoke for all of us. It's not that he's hateful. It's difficult to find something to hate about him. For me, Gwyneth Paltrow is the object for all my hatred. Yeah, no, someone went, oh, and I know there's people out there. I like her. She's sassy. I know. She actually said last week, and I'm not going to stay on Gwyneth for those of you who are horrified at the prospect of this comedy topic, as I am. She said last week that she went on a macrobiotic diet when she found out her dad had cancer so it would cure him. Are you following me? She. Yes, thank you. Thank you. Thank you. Thank you. No one would say that unless they were a sociopath. Hey, I found out some of you guys were sick, so I took some medicine. Is that cool? I found out you had a bullet wound, so I fucking reloaded. Everybody down? This is for the Americans. George Clooney, your hero and sexy movie star who lives near Lake Como, and quite rightly, and has an unbelievably hot and yet horrifyingly surgicized Italian girlfriend, does a Nespresso ad here. Yeah, you fucking heard me. He does a Nescafe ad here for the little amulet, horrible, snunklet, dinklet, fucking shooter chunkies that you use. The little baglet, you know, thing, receptacle things that you stick in a coffee thing that makes fake coffee espresso. George Clooney is the spokesman for that, America. I just wanted you to know that. That's all. You don't know it because you're not here, but on TV you see George Clooney in a TV ad going, what? It doesn't make him less cool. It doesn't make him less cool. The royal wedding happened earlier this week, and I have to admit, despite it having no relation to reality in England whatsoever, you may recall earlier this year the people of London took to the streets in their hundreds of thousands to protest the intense government cuts and the savage David Cameron fucking led anus Tory government. And yes, I said anus Tory government. And all the horrible things that are happening to England, just like in America, where they've sold themselves out to bankers and keep remortgaging themselves and giving the money back to rich people once more so they can steal it from them again. In the midst of all this, England did something that, of course, New Zealand loved and the rest of the world loved. They did what they can only do better than any other country in the world. The two things that England does best. One, utter and complete denial of reality. England's going to shit in a handbasket, and they had the most lavish fucking event ever, and it was fantastic. And secondly, celebrating the past, because England does the past like nobody else, because they kept the outfits. Royal horse guards wearing horsetails in their hair with shined cuirasses and swords alongside. Every member of the royal family pitching up like they were in a Gilbert and Sullivan operetta. All the men were wearing swords. When was the last time you were in public and saw a group of men in a wedding party wearing swords? It's very, very unlikely the Vikings are going to attack at any point south of York or anywhere on the coast of England, much less near Westminster Abbey. The red outfit that William wore with the stunning blue hat on it, everything about it was absolutely perfect. Westminster Abbey filled with trees as if they had grown there from the time of Edward the Confessor. Little children dressed in adorable outfits that were completely irresistible, and Gretchen standing on the balcony while everyone cheered with her hands over her ears. That greatest of all moments. It was romantic, it was engaging, it was diverting. For a moment, we all got a boner when we saw Kate in her gown. And we all forgot about how shit the world is for two fucking seconds when we saw them exchange looks over that giant ass ceremony that included 15,000 different clergymen. Did anyone else see the vicar do cartwheels after it was over? I think that's what it did for the world. It gave us all a break for a day and let us think, you know, Prince Philip is a right old fascist, but does he look fucking sexy at 100 in that uniform? I might follow him into the valley of death. Half a league, half a league, half a league onward. And are we all hoping that Prince Harry and Pippa hooked up or what? I think that's all I could think about. Everything about it was perfectly executed. It was a fairy tale, down to the cake. And then when they got in that bitching little Aston Martin and drove out with the just married thing at the end, it was kind of like the wedding we all wanted, but couldn't afford because we don't have a nation to rape to pay for it. I'm going to read some questions that we received from our listeners here. No, I haven't gotten to the big topic yet, but I'm sure someone will ask me. We have people write in on email. And the email is smartest@aspecialthing.com. I have not looked at these, nor have I prepared an answer, as is our custom here on the Proopcast. These have been, my wife wrote them down off the email, and I am going to read them to you right now, having no prior knowledge of them. Hal asks, and you can tell because they're on crappy hotel stationery that I just dunked in vodka. Hal asks, I have to live in Tennessee this summer for work. Do you have any survival tips? Well, we're in New Zealand now, and I've just been to Hamilton, which is, I think, as close to Tennessee as you're going to get. I've never spent any durable amount of time in Tennessee. I have been to Mississippi and Louisiana and Georgia and all the states in Dixie. Tennessee, sadly, no. My understanding is, of course, Nashville and Memphis are places of staggering history where the birth of all music, that's any fucking kind of music at all, came from. And the barbecue is almost unrelentingly pork. What I would do is plan on losing about 15 pounds before you go there so that you can eat all the fucking pork and sweetened iced tea you can get down. And I would also visit Nashville to visit the Country Music Hall of Fame and, of course, visit Memphis to see where B.B. King once stood and quake in fear, you tiny fucking mortal. Sophia writes, yeah, you heard me. It's like going to Neil Finn's house, except resonant. Oh, look what I did. I bitch slapped you a little bit. How about that? Sophia asks, oh, that one's too difficult. Here's another one. Lars asks, I recently watched Lubitsch's great To Be or Not To Be, 1942, and thought of you. I noticed both that movie and Hitchcock's Foreign Correspondent, 1940, advocate U.S. involvement in World War II. Should that affect our enjoyment of the movies? Oh, absolutely not. I think propaganda can be fucking exhilarating. Any movies made during the war or before the war were absolutely to sex us up into getting into the war. Now we live in the postmodern era where movies are made about wars that happened 10 years ago that are supposed to reflect on how bad war is, whereas the present time reflects only on how great war is and how we should keep it going at all goddamn times. Here's another question from Kenzo Nat. We have four limbs, spiders have eight, centipedes many. I guess we don't know how many centipedes have. Snakes, none. Not entirely true. Which would be the ideal number of extremities and what purpose should they fulfill? Kittens, Kanzanat! You flummox me to the very quick. Well, for men, we all know that we want that one. What did you call it? Extremity. I would have said appendage. Although mine is extreme. I had it out yesterday and they were like, "You're blocking the sun, the blue penguins are dying." I don't know that I would remove any extremities from humans, not having the knowledge of how it would work otherwise. There are lizards that are legless, and they're called legless lizards, and they look just like snakes, but they're lizards. So I don't know how anything fucking works. Felicia asks, or Felicia, if you want to pronounce it in a humorous way. I'm almost 20. Now I feel awful when I read the first sentence of her question. I am almost 25 and painfully shy. Well, certainly. Having your name pronounced as Felicia in front of the entire podcasting world is going to be an icebreaker. Do you have any advice for me to get over this and to help me start my life? No, you oughtn't be painfully shy. I'm in New Zealand where everyone's fucking painfully shy. Where you come up to people and go, "Hi, I'm Greg," and they go, "Hi." It's like, no, this is where you say your name. Just dive in. What you need to do, Felicia, is grow a pair right this fucking instant. I think it was Bono, and I hate to quote Bono because he's such a pretentious nit who wrote a Spider-Man musical. But I will quote him in this regard because he's right about this. He said, "The world's easier to change than you think. Get out there and fucking change it." Or something to that regard. I can't remember the exact words. Also, I would remind you of what Oscar Wilde said. Your weaknesses are your strength. Your shyness is your secret power. Use your shyness because you will get people to come near you. They'll think you're mysterious and interesting. And then when you lay your thoughts on them, they'll go, "Fuck, she was so quiet. How did I know she was a bouquet? Ready to bloom." Camilla asks, if you could choose to do five things. Oh, holy kittens, these fucking essay questions. If you can, holy saved kittens that live on shelves that come running through the mud. If you could choose to do five things that you have never done before and always wanted to do, legal or otherwise, and you were not held liable for the consequences, what would they be? Oh, kittens, five things that I've never done before. I'm coming back to that one. Talal, what's your favorite smoke? Marijuana. Does anyone call it poo-ha hair? No, do they? One person. That's not a resounding yay. I like cigars, too. And you can get the Cubans here. But I would say marijuana most of all. Because of, as Louis Armstrong once said, it helps with the blues. Jack asks, Jack asks, but starts with a quote from the Bible. And I don't know if this is in any way right. I'm presuming that Jack has done his research here. Ezekiel 23:19 through 20 reads as follows. Yet she became more and more promiscuous as she recalled the days of her youth when she was a prostitute in Egypt. There she lusted after her lovers whose genitals were like those of donkey. And Felicia, are you listening to this part? How's your shyness now? Or as Edward G. Robinson said immortally in the movie The Ten Commandments, where's God now, Moses? That's right, Edward G. Robinson, the gangster actor, played a Jew in the Ten Commandments and said that line awesomely? And whose emissions were like that of horses? Do I need to feel inadequate? That's the question. Is this what women are looking for? Well, darling, no. It's been many a year since Ezekiel went down. I think if you had a member like a donkey and your emission was like that of a horse, you would frighten a modern girl. First of all, she'd go, oh my God, my tongue piercing. That's disgusting. And second of all, I don't think women are looking for emissions like that of horses. I think you'll find as you grow older, Jack or John, if I may, and I think I may, emissions matter only to men. Women are largely uninterested in your emissions, other than in dodging them if necessary. Men are obsessed with the size of their, genitals like those of donkeys. And men are obsessed with the size of their emissions. I think you'll find that women would rather have an awesome pair of fucking 4.5-inch heel slingbacks. And that if women could propagate with shoes, there would be no men. But rather a lot of great fucking looking shoes. And women would go, I'm having a baby. Look at these. Women do care about size, don't get me wrong. Don't break out some fucking ballpoint pen and expect to thrill the fucking grandstand. But donkey, wow. No one wants anything resembling a donkey inside them or around them. Gemma, are you ready with some questions? Have we hit the floor? I think we got about 10 or 15 here.
You've got 15 left.
Beautiful. Gemma, my tour manager and redoubtable friend and helper in this regard, is going to go out. Does anyone have any questions? I realize the house is super dark. We could turn the house up a little bit. I don't want you guys to be shy, but I do want you to... Are you live tweeting the show, or are you texting one of your douchebag friends?
We have a question Kidding. Down here.
There we go. Does anyone have a question? Would anyone like to
talk
to me?
All right. So, touching only by
What's your name, my friend?
Lucas.
We start with Appalachians. Lucas, right. Hi, buddy. Where are you from?
Austria.
Austria?
Yeah.
Sweet. That's nowhere near New Zealand. That's... Go on, Lucas.
All right, so judging only by the vices, not virtues, who is the most important public figure right now?
Oh, kittens. The most important public figure. That's a difficult question, isn't it? I mean, that's very local, isn't it? Because as they say horribly, I'm going to answer you, by the way. I'm not going to obfuscate. But as you know, I digress almost completely at the drop of a kitten. So it's going to take a while to get to your answer, Lucas. First of all politics are local, right? What's happening here in Wellington is most important to you people. You could give a fuck what's happening in America in some regards. What's happening in America, wildly important to Americans. Not so much to people even in Canada. By the way, Canada just re-elected their conservative government, which no one here probably even cares or knows about in any way. There's a couple of you have Canadians in the house? Where from, Pookie?
Quebec.
Quebec, ah. Parlez-vous français? Parlez-vous québécois?
Oui.
Ah, oui. We're in Quebec. I don't speak French. We're in Quebec.
Sherbrooke.
Ah, up north then.
Yeah.
Well, yeah.
No, up south more.
Yeah, it's not. It's just above Montreal. Ouais. So, but you were for Harper then.
Pardon?
For Mr. Harper, who just won re-election.
Yeah.
You don't vote Bloc Québécois.
I would have voted for them, but I'm here.
But you're here, okay. Well, again, see, she's from Quebec, so she would care. Everyone else in the room, Canada, where's that? It's your sister country. They are the New Zealanders of the Northern Hemisphere. And their shellfish is fucking awesome, too, by the way. Having said that, I think you'd probably have to say, and this is without any kind of American fascism dunking in, Obama right at the moment, because we're involved in so many enterprises that involve so many other countries in the world, and people's lives are at stake in those enterprises, that I think he might be the one. Is he truly, really the most important person? No, because a room full of 12 ugly, old, rich white men controls everything that happens on Earth. I hope that answers your question, Lucas. I'd say John Key, but you guys know it, I'd be lying. Although I will remind you that Obama, W, and John Key all went to Harvard, so you do the fucking math. When I say there's 12 white men in a room, think about that. But how could three disparate leaders who supposedly have different viewpoints from different countries all have gone to the same university? Yeah, whatever. Anybody else? Hopefully a Kiwi. There's one. What's your name, young man?
My name is Sean.
Sean. Where from?
I'm from Christchurch originally.
Sweet. Living here in Welling?
Yes.
A Wellingtonian?
And know? These days, yes. Yeah. I wanted to wonder, I am wondering, in fact, that you played Seymour the Fractal Cat in the radio series.
I was going to be about my career. This is awesome.
Yeah. In the radio series of the same name. And I wondered what other animals you might want to play.
Wow, this is like a Barbara Walters question. If you were a twigwag, which way would you lean when the breeze blew? I'd play any animal available to me. Obviously, a kitten would be important to me. But I also think a triceratops have been undervoiced over the years. And obviously, ocelots, very, very sexy to me. Seymour the Fractal Cat was kind of a kitten in a way. No one's heard the show except you and me. So we've lost not only everyone in this room, but anyone listening to this Proofcast on Earth. Thank you for your question, Sean. How about a giraffe? They don't really make that many noises. So it would just be mostly nodding and winking. Anybody else? In the back? Nobody? I knew this would happen here. Oh, there's someone. Here, can you go meet Gemma halfway? Thank you. I don't know if the cord reaches that far.
Yeah, we're good.
Hi, Greg.
Hi, what's your name?
I'm Chris.
Hi, Chris. Where from?
Originally Hamilton. So thank you.
Chris, don't be frightened. You're using a microphone, and this is electricity.
It's a big deal. My question for you, Greg, is who is your favorite New Zealander and why?
Oh, Kit. Wow. Well, you know who's here in this room here tonight? A little comedian named Rhys Darby, ladies and gentlemen. He's my third favorite. After Brad and Jerry, the Concords. But we did the Concords together, and Rhys and I had spent all day hanging out, and he's a lovely guy, and he did my show in L.A., and he couldn't be more gracious or nice. And much like all Kiwis that you meet here, obviously insanely polite and very, very soft-spoken and delightful. Unlike Americans, you don't pound on your chest and pull your dick out every 2 seconds. But I'd have to say Brad and Jerry, because Brad and Jerry, I worked with them years ago in Scottish land and then again in English land. And then when they did their show in America, they fucking remembered me and put me on it. So how can you... No, that was before... Seymour, cool it, Sean. That was the radio series I was talking about. In English land, I did the BBC radio series with the Concorde. So I adore those fellows, and Rhys as well. And Rhys would be, as I say, my third favorite. I hope that will suffice, because I have him prima facie here, the genuine article in the night. Wearing a sexy little Mao hat, by the way. Leading what can only be described as his own comedy revolution. Anybody else? Wow. Everybody's gone quiet. I thought someone was going to fucking confront me with the whole Osama question here tonight. I guess I'm going to have to answer it myself. I knew you guys would be too polite in a way. You got to give us a little break, right? You saw us dancing and jumping up and down on TV like fucking douchebags. Remember, you've had enough crisis here in the last few months to understand the media gets everything wrong and everything skewed through a weird fucking Rupert Murdoch prism, right? When you saw the people jumping up and down and dancing, a lot of people have the right to jump up and down and dance that he's dead because, as you know, Osama bin Laden was an evil cocksucker who's responsible for the death of loads of innocent people. Having said that, dancing on anyone's grave is a particular pleasure. And not one that I'm often tempted to enjoy. But I would, again, urge you to remember that it wasn't everyone in America. There's 330 million of us. There's, what, 4 million of you here? 39 million sheep, right? It took one Osama murder to make us seem like 330 million sheep in your eyes. Here's a couple of quotes that reminded me of what happened this week. Because our president came on TV and said justice has been done. Now, he went to Harvard Law School, so he should know that justice is not done at the end of a gun. Justice is done when you capture people and try them in front of the world. George Orwell, who I will quote endlessly because he's always right, political language is designed to make lies sound truthful and murder respectable and to give the appearance of solidarity to pure wind. I know, it's not that funny, but somehow that's what happens on this show. I take what was once a lively celebration of Rhys Darby's career and turn it into a fucking morbid obituary for America. In Rome, and everything with me is ancient Rome, for hundreds and maybe even a thousand years, those who triumphed in battle were given a triumph in Rome, right? At one point, the criterion was loose. As the years wore on, it became a little more strenuous. So a victorious general would come back from the field, and they would be paraded through the streets of Rome. Booty on wagons, painted scenes of the landscape of the land taken over, captives of every sort driven forward in chains, sometimes royals from the land of the place conquered. And sometimes even the Romans were astounded at the cruelty of themselves when there'd be when Egypt was captured and Caesar had his triumph for Egypt. One of Cleopatra's sisters, Arsinoe, who was just a teenager, was in chains on a float, and she rolled by, and the Romans cried for her. They didn't cheer as they usually did when the captives were driven by, right? And all the booty piled up on wagons, and the slaves driven forward, and then the legions last, right? The legions singing, and always about Caesar. He's a husband to every woman, a wife to every man, and shit like that. Hide your fucking wives, Caesar's dick is out and whatnot, right? And then after every triumph, a comedy triumph by clowns and comedians where they took the piss out of every fucking royal person that was in the triumph before. This was our American triumph. Having Obama come on TV to the day of mission accomplished when George Bush landed in a helicopter on an aircraft carrier that had been strategically turned so you could see that it wasn't just a couple of hundred yards offshore. He landed and a giant banner unfurled, mission accomplished, and he said, mission accomplished, and he had, as you recall, a giant codpiece on the day, right? To the day, how many years later, Obama came on TV and said he's been killed and his body taken into custody. Mm-hmm. When Caesar conquered Gaul, it took over a decade, and the French figure somewhere between 1 million and 2 million Gauls were killed in the subjugation of Gaul. Now, Gaul became utterly Roman, and within two generations, all the kids had Roman names and were studying Roman things, and became utterly Latinized, and that's why French is a Latin language, n'est pas? When he finally had his triumph, he had captured the Gaulish king Vercingetorix some 4 or 5 years before he'd been held in captivity in Rome. And what they did with the foreign kings was at the end of the triumph, they throttled them in front of everybody, right? Well, Vercingetorix was the one who wore the helmet like Asterisk and Obelisk, the two winged helmets like that. Well, they dragged his fucking carcass out of the fucking basement and put him on a float and at the end wound a rope around his neck and pulled it tight and he cacked in front of Caesar. Now, the Roman emperors and the Roman generals used to wear their face painted red because that was the guys Zeus wore when he went to war. Well, Obama wasn't painted red, but we've done just about everything for that. So I ask you for your acceptance and forgiveness and understanding that this violent moment in violent history would be celebrated such, and that you would see douchebags with fucking fraternity hats jumping up and down outside the White House. You have to understand, and the author I quote incessantly besides Orwell is, of course, Cormac McCarthy, who said, "War is God." One last quote, and then we'll fuck off into the night. The appearance, war is a way of shattering to pieces, or pouring into the stratosphere, or sinking into the depths of the sea, materials which otherwise would be used to make the masses too comfortable, and hence, in the long run, too intelligent. I don't think war is God. I think God is love. And I want to thank all of you for coming out here tonight and participating in this Proopcast with me. My name's been Greg Proops, and from the bottom of the world, I bid you hello. Thanks, you guys.